Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
So before I disappear, I want to welcome our guest speaker this evening, as we have been spending the season of Lent learning about death and dying. And as we are aware, after we die, there's usually some more stuff to do. And Brad Kurtz is qualified to help you do it. Brad is the director of sales and marketing at Cedar Memorial, one of the big funeral homes in Cedar Rapids. When I was pastor at Echo Hill Presbyterian in Cedar Rapids, I worked with Cedar Memorial pretty frequently. So. Although I don't know that I ever actually crossed paths with Brad. Brad works with families in pre-arrangements, and I typically worked with families when they needed those arrangements. So I'm sure I used some of Brad's work while I was there. Brad is a licensed funeral director, works with families, again, primarily in pre-planning. But of course, sometimes funeral direction is an all hands on deck activity. So I may well have crossed paths with him and we just don't know it. Brad is here to talk to us about what we need to know and what our loved ones will be very glad that we told them about our funeral plans when that time comes. And what has changed since the time you planned your parents' funerals?
All right, can everybody hear me okay? That's usually the first test we have. Sound okay? All right, I'm getting thumbs up here, so that's good. Yeah, he did a great job of introducing me. I'll talk a little bit more kind of about who I am here for just a few minutes and kind of some of my connections to your area a little bit. I know you folks are in the central Iowa area. And I actually, we also have a sister company I'm going to talk a little bit about too, or also today, that is out of Waukee, so closer to you folks. We have a facility there. Talk a little bit about what they do. And then I'm just going to visit with you a little bit on pre-planning, which some of you may have talked about or been interested in. And really, my goals with you today are to talk just a little bit about what it is that I do, offer some suggestions and tips, and then just to really see if you have any questions. You know, I'm not here to sell you anything or to really try to talk you into anything. My goals are always just to bring more information to the community when I do these things. So one of the things I'm going to do here is I'm going to share a portion of my screen here. Bear with me here just a second. Can everybody see that okay?
Yes.
It'll be a little presentation screen. Okay, very good. Okay, so I go here to the next one. So just a quick little introduction about what Iowa cremation is. I've been doing this for about 15 years now, and when I first started as a student before I got my license, we started this company called Iowa Cremation, and it was founded really as a membership-based organization, and the goals were to offer immediate cremation to folks throughout Iowa at a simple cost while still offering a dignified service. Cremation, as most of you likely know, the choice as a disposition has more than doubled in the last 30 years, and it's not going away. Those numbers are only going to increase. And we decided that in many communities throughout Iowa, they were underserved, and not so much in metropolitan areas like Cedar Rapids or Des Moines or those areas, but some of the smaller communities where their funeral homes may not have a crematory. It wasn't really an option for many places. So we invested in creating two facilities, the one that's in Cedar Rapids, which is pictured at the top there, and then the one that's in Waukee, that's in the bottom picture there. And actually what happened And about 5 years ago or so, I was sent to Waukee to start that facility. And then I came back to Cedar Rapids about 4 years later to join the team back here. But I got things started there, and I had the opportunity to live in Waukee and enjoy all the things that the Des Moines, West Des Moines area had to offer. And my family and I just really, really loved it there. Had work not called me back, I probably would have stayed. I loved it that much. So we talk about how much we loved it all the time. So anyway, that's a little introduction to Iowa Cremation. So what quickly just talk about our benefits of the membership organization. Our plans are simple and focused. We offer low monthly payments. One of the benefits that's offered through Iowa Cremation and a lot of organizations that do pre-planning, it obviously protects from rising costs. And we offer inclusive offerings, and we also have a travel protection program that offers, you know, the ability if someone were to pass away out of state, that we would offer those services at no cost, no additional cost. So one of the things that I always like to bring up about when we talk about death and dying is that, you know, surprisingly, over 70% of the families that we deal with on a daily basis actually no death has occurred. So, you know, why would somebody walk into a funeral home if they didn't really need us? So what they're really doing is they're looking to secure the peace of mind that pre-planning offers and make those sound financial decisions to pre-fund their arrangements. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, again, in my 15 years of experience, I've seen people, you know, as a funeral director that have pre-planned, and I've seen those that have not. And, you know, I've not ever once had a son, a daughter, or a survivor come to me and say, you know, I really wish mom or dad had not done that. I wish they wouldn't have answered all these questions for me. So, you know, our survivors are alleviated and appreciative that their loved ones have completed these things in advance. And, you know, the question I always ask people, usually when we get started on things like this is, you know, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want to do? And, you know, creating a sound plan, you know, really helps your family when you're doing that. So there's really kind of four steps that I always tell people, the four high points as far as what you really need to do. The first one I always recommend is just getting organized, and we'll talk more about this. Then you have some choices and decisions that have to be made. You know, some of the advantages of planning ahead, we'll talk about those. And then when I was introduced, he kind of talked about, you know, a little bit about, you know, we touch on some new and different topics, and, you know, things have changed a lot in my area of the world in the last 10 years, just as they have for everybody with technology. But, you know, throughout the country, I'm going to share with you some of the things that I'm seeing that are changing, and kind of talk about how that could impact us in Iowa as far as choices that can be made. So when you're getting organized, one of the most critical pieces that I always see is that families don't leave enough information recorded for their loved ones. So I'm telling you right now, I cannot tell you what my mother's social security number is. So if she doesn't have that written down for me, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know. And you'd be surprised how many families I run into where they may not even know what their mother's maiden name was, which is just, you know, those are some examples of information that are required for the paperwork that has to be completed. And then, you know, secondly, recording the personal wishes, you know, do you have specific things on how you want it to be handled? And I think the biggest part of that is really that's a gift to your loved one, and they know, okay, I'm not making a decision that mom or dad or grandpa or whoever wouldn't have wanted me to, or, you know, I'm not spending more money than they would have wanted me to. You know, having that kind of set in stone ahead of time really helps people a lot. And then also it gives you, you know, the opportunity to also communicate, did you specific wishes. Is, you know, some people get down into, you know, what kind of flowers do I want? You know, I want to make sure that these hymns are played at my service at church, or, you know, maybe I don't want a service at my church. Maybe I just want it at the gravesite. Obviously with COVID right now, that's changed some of the way we do things, and we can talk about that a little bit more. But, you know, having those things written down ahead of time. And the last one on this slide that I always bring up, and this is probably the most difficult, is to begin the conversation. You know, it's this isn't a comfortable topic by any means to bring up, but it doesn't mean it's any less important. You know, I'm a parent myself, and what I always think of is, you know, I can't tell you how many conversations that I've had to have with my children that I didn't really have, but you know, later on you come to realize how important those conversations are. And this is really just another one of those things. I know it's easier for me to say that than it is to actually do it, but you know, it's an important conversation to make sure people understand. So no matter if you begin the planning process with, you know, whatever funeral home or organization, like I said, you're going to have some choices that you're going to have to make. And you know, there's some various disposition options. I'm sure you all are fairly familiar with them, but I just always like to review them. You know, earth burial is, you know, probably the more common choice in Iowa in the last, you know, 150 plus years that has been selected. So that means you'd have what are called interment rites, which are essentially a burial space. You'd have a casket that the deceased would be in, a burial vault, and then a marker, a headstone. So that's commonly referred to as traditional burial. You may hear that used sometimes. People refer to it that way. However, as I kind of mentioned in the beginning, in the last, you know, 15 or 20 years, cremation has slowly met up to where in Iowa we're right at about 50-50. In some areas it's a little bit higher as far as the percentage of cremation versus burial. But I fully anticipate that in the next 4 years that it's going to be more like cremation is going to be 60%, if not more, would be my guess. So while we're on the discussion about cremation, it talks there about, you know, we're all probably fairly aware of what cremation is. It's intense heat and flame that reduces the body to skeletal fragments, which commonly referred to as cremated remains. Some people in our line of work shorten that to be called cremains. I don't like to use that jargon, but, you know, you'll sometimes hear that. So then the cremated remains are placed in an urn, which then can be inurned or placed into a niche or in-ground interment or any of those options. And then I also know that there's a cemetery in Des Moines there too. It's one of the city cemeteries. I can't remember which one, but they have a scattering garden there too. So there's some facilities that offer that option as well. And then entombment, that's a fancy word for, you know, placement of casket or remains inside of a crypt. And you kind of see a picture there with that flower. That's what a lot of mausoleums look like, whether they're indoors or out. There's typically some type of granite or marble covering that is on there. And then the other current choice or decision right now is anatomical donation. And some folks choose to donate their body to science for medical research at a hospital. We see it frequently here in Cedar Rapids with the University of Iowa, the Carver College of Medicine, which is a well-known facility. And then, of course, the Des Moines Osteopathic College there, they have a program as well that they offer that. The biggest thing we tell people is something that you elect to do that has to be typically arranged prior to one's passing. So you usually have to, you know, notify the school that this is something that we would wish to have, and that you usually have to fill out some paperwork, so you're sort of pre-registered, if you will. This is different than organ and tissue donation. And this is a question I get a lot. People say, well, I'm a registered organ donor, and I want to make sure that happens. So usually most of the time, well before any funeral home or anybody gets involved, the organ donor network is in contact with the hospital, nursing home, or wherever, you know, that's going to, wherever the passing takes place, to make sure that those arrangements are all handled. And really, you know, I don't represent a cemetery, but I do always try to tell people that, you know, no matter what the disposition have, I just to remind people that you can have an event to honor the life lived. And for some people, that permanent perpetual place of rest or place to return to is important. And one of the things I kind of preach on sometimes, you could say, is that, you know, the what I'm worried about down the road is that we're going to have people that have closets full of relatives in urns. So if people select cremation, I really want people to be, you know, for that not to happen, for them to be, you know, to be reverently placed somewhere. I mean, that's really one of the more important things. All right. So the next one we'll go to just a little bit more about planning ahead. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but one of the things I just want to really touch on is that the advantages of no matter what funeral home you choose to pre-plan, first off, you get to decide. So, you know, if you're a little bit type A and you want to make sure, hey, this is what gets done, absolutely, you can do that. The other, many funeral providers offer what's called a price guaranteed plan, and that offers you to essentially lock in prices that protects against inflation. And most of the statistics I've seen in the last the last 20 years have said that cremation and funeral costs typically more than double about every 10 years or so, just like, you know, a lot of the other things that we have to purchase. And by paying in advance, you can halt some of that inevitable inflation. Planning ahead or prepaying usually offers payment options as well. So you can secure those arrangements, but make lower payments that usually are no interest and no finance charge. Again, depending on the funeral home or provider that you use. And then last, of course, I've kind of touched on this already, but you really spare your family from making those decisions and having financial discussions when they're under a lot of emotional distress. Obviously, anytime you lose somebody, you know, I've told numerous times, you know, you only have one mom and one dad. And so it's understandable that people are under immense emotional pressure. And really, you know, what we don't want to see as funeral home, at least I don't, as a funeral director, is I would hate to have somebody emotionally overspend at a time like that. That's really not what we want to have done. The other thing I also note on this is, you know, we've found that there's usually about 75 or so decisions from the time someone passes to the time the funeral is over. And usually, if you prearrange and pre-fund, by the time that time comes where a family has to come in, that reduces the choices that person has to make or the questions they have to answer to about 25 things. So, I mean, it really takes a huge chunk out of what they might have to do. And really, the last thing I'll just hit on here is that, you know, in my experience, I've just found that by prearranging, it really allows children or whomever to focus on two things. Number one, honoring the life of their loved one. And number two, supporting each other at a time that is one of the most difficult times in their life. So that's just my little presentation on planning ahead there and kind of what how that really helps people. And then, like in the beginning we talked about, I'm going a little fast here, but I'm trying to cover a lot so that you can, I can answer any questions for you too, because I know we don't, this goes about a half hour, so I want to make a good use of your time. So what's new or different? So what's new or different that I've seen in the last 15 years is, or 20 years, is what you can do with cremated remains. So it always used to be that, you know, the cremated remains, they went in an urn, somebody either took them or they went to the cemetery to be buried or to be placed in a niche or what have. Well, as you can see in that picture in the upper right hand corner, there's a lot of different things we can do nowadays that it can be done. And one of them that's pictured there is a company that's called LifeGem. Now I've only worked with them probably two times in my career, but they offer what they can take the cremated remains, they put them under high heat and pressure, and a period of time, they create a lab created gemstone that can be, you know, put in a ring or what have you. That's probably the more, I don't want to say, it's probably not the norm. I mean, like I said, I've only done it a couple times, but it is an option. There's also companies out there that create, this is a newer one, they take the cremated remains and they call them solidified cremated remains. So what they do is they essentially make them into, you know, what you and I would call, they look like rocks or stones, and then, you know, either each person can have one or what have you. There's also a company that we've worked with previously called Memory Glass, and they make hand-blown glass sculptures, essentially. A lot of them look kind of like a paperweight that contain a small portion of the cremated remains. And one of the things that I've even had families that do burial select that, and you think, well, how do they do burial and do this? Well, I came up with it kind of on the fly, because I had a daughter I was working with. Her mother had passed away, and the daughter had actually moved to Iceland or somewhere. I can't remember the exact country, but I mean, we're talking, she moved countries away. And it meant so much to her that we took a small amount of soil from the grave, and we actually had it made into one of those memory glass pieces. So she always had a piece of Iowa with her, you know, where mom was. So it meant something to her. And, you know, some of us, we see these things that I'm talking about, and they're like, we're kind of puts your guard up a little bit. But, you know, if it means something to people and it helps them, that's why we offer it. It's not for everybody, but for some people. One of the other things that I'm just going to touch on is, you see there, it's called alkaline hydrolysis. And you'll, if you haven't already, you'll see more articles about this coming out in different publications, even on the news. But for many years now, facilities like the Mayo Clinic in Rochester and several others have used this process for a variety of things, you know, to get rid of, I don't want to say get rid of, but to essentially dispose of medical specimens or a variety of things. This process is now legal in a variety of states. However, it is not currently legal in Iowa for humans. I'll put it that way. It is legal for pets. And we do operate a pet facility that does use this process. We're called Companions for Life. That's our pet business. We offer pet, dignified pet cremation. And we actually have that also at our facility in Waukee and Cedar Rapids that we talked about earlier. So not to get too far off on the pet portion, but anyway, alkaline hydrolysis, or sometimes called flame liquidation, what that is essentially the body is reduced again to bone, what's left with the bone. And this process, instead of flame, it uses water and it uses a chemical. And the chemical is, you know, comparative to lye. It's a very basic chemical that's used in this. And then all that's left at the end of this process is the bones, like I said. And this takes more time than a traditional cremation, which I have to get used to saying traditional cremation, but it takes longer than a flame-based cremation does. And the other thing is that through alkaline hydrolysis, you actually end up with slightly more of the cremated remains than you would with a flame cremation. And that just has to do with the amount of, things that flame does break down versus this process. It doesn't break down some of the natural structures, but it does leave you with, fully sanitary cremated remains similar to what a flame option would do. And the last one on this slide, a little bit about natural or green burial. There's one, I'll talk about that in a second. I won't talk about that yet, but more commonly, cemeteries are offering natural or green burial or funeral homes. And that's really, there's a kind of a difference in what, how green is that burial. So, you can have a green burial that, as green as can be. So, the deceased is not embalmed. They're wrapped in a garment or a shroud of some type, and they're buried directly under the ground. That's as green as it gets. Okay, so you can't get much further than that. And then there's kind of there's in between too, where the body may not be embalmed, but it may be in a casket to be able to be viewed by immediate family. And that casket is made of some sort of biodegradable material, whether it's wicker or something like that. And then that's actually placed in the ground without a burial vault. So to kind of come back around, one of the questions I get is, well, how is that legal? Well, technically speaking, Iowa law does not say that you have to have a burial vault. That is not in the law anywhere. That is a cemetery requirement. Some cemeteries, they may have something in there that you can decline to use a burial vault. You may have to pay a fee to not use a burial vault or things like that. And there's a difference between burial vaults and outer burial containers. We won't get that deep today, but the reason that most cemeteries require at least a concrete container of some type for a full burial is because of the grave caving in. It's a maintenance situation. It's also a bit of a safety situation. I've tripped numerous times in older cemeteries. I'm not overly coordinated. It can be a safety issue for some cemeteries, but there's no law in Iowa that says that you cannot be buried directly into the ground. Now, there are laws that say where you can or can't be buried. You can't just bury somebody in your backyard, obviously, but that's kind of a common misnomer with people as far as what you can or can't do for that. So I hit 7:30 here, and I'm just going to put this last one up. If you do, I thank you for your time. First off, I don't talk to people about this very often because it's not really a topic that I have people banging down the door for me to come present. I'm very happy to be able to do this. If you do have questions, I'll take a few here, but I did want to give you my email because I know sometimes people may not feel comfortable asking a certain question in front of a group of people, but I'm going to stop sharing here so you can see me again. And are there any questions right now that anybody has? I know I covered a lot real quick there.
You did. It was great. Thank you. That's very informative. Is it possible with cremation to be placed on another's burial if they are like so many inches before under the ground in like 18 inches or something before, or do they have to open the vault in Iowa and then put whatever, a paper towel tube or whatever you're going to put the ashes in?
So the way that the law reads is that there have, and I don't know the inches off the top of my head, but it reads, as far as the burial is concerned, of a traditional burial that's in a burial vault, there has to be a certain amount of room from the top of the grave to the burial vault, okay? But that does not say anything about an urn. So it's based on the cemetery again. So I know of several cemeteries that will allow a traditional casket and one urn. I know some that will allow two urns per space. I know, you know, some really rural cemeteries that they don't really have a whole lot of rules. So, you know, however many names you can fit on the marker is how many urns you can put in the spot. You know, that's really kind of their rule. So, but there isn't any state law or anything that says, you know, what you can or can't do with that. So that's a good question. These are good questions I like to answer because they dispel a lot of rumors, you know, that people may not be aware of. So
do they just add a name to, depending on the headstone itself, that's all, for example, to be buried on a parent's grave or something like that? Do they put a plaque? Can they just re-engrave, or does the whole new headstone come in depending on?
Yeah, it varies on the stones. Right? Yeah, it varies on the cemetery. And, you know, when you're looking at like a Memorial Park cemetery, I'm trying to think, Highland Memorial Gardens, which is, if you kind of know where that is at all, it's by Ankeny, I think. They primarily all have all flat bronze on granite markers. You can't really engrave bronze. So whether they could add a plate or not, I don't know, but they may have to remake it. You know, if you're going to add another name to it, where with, you know, an upright granite or something like that, you know, they probably could find a way to bring out an engraver and add a name to it. I've seen that frequently.
Can remains cremated remains go over state lines to be buried somewhere else? Does that have to be done by a funeral home, or can family do that?
Family can do that. I just always recommend that if you're getting on an airplane or something like that, to have a death certificate with you when you have that. It's nobody's really going to say anything otherwise. And I don't know of any state that currently requires a funeral director to be present for a burial of cremated remains. Again, some cemeteries.
Cemetery's job, right?
Right. Yeah. And a lot of cemeteries will have some kind of, you know, cemetery person that they can have that would handle that. But we through Iowa Cremation, we frequently see people that are from, you know, Iowa that end up, you know, taking mom or dad to another state. And one of the questions I get is, well, what if my kids aren't here? How do you get me there? And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, the only way currently to send cremated remains from one place to another without physically taking them is they all have to go by U.S. mail. So they go by the U.S. Postal Service. So
really?
Yeah.
No FedEx?
No FedEx. For whatever reason, they won't carry them. FedEx and UPS won't do it. So it has to be through the U.S. Postal Service. But it's whatever the high, you know, the highest, whatever their most expensive option is, of course, naturally, and they pretty much expedite those. So, you know, if, for instance, I were to send cremated remains from Cedar Rapids to West Des Moines, if I sent them today, they're going to be there tomorrow. As long as it's within Iowa, it gets there the next day. And usually if it's outside of Iowa, it's, you know, a day or two. They take pretty high precautions on that to make sure that doesn't happen. That's not something that the Postal Service wants to have somebody looking down on them about. They've got some other issues right now. So,
do they label it?
Yeah.
The box? Oh, they do label the box. Okay.
Yeah, they actually have a specific labels to use. They are, and Yeah, when you get there at the post office with them, you have to make sure it is ready to go.
Does that go in the dead letter box?
Yeah.
Jeez. Here we go.
Yep.
I think Warren had a question.
Right. Yeah. What does specifically Iowa have in the way of some consumer protection for families to not end up with prepaid services for a funeral home that goes out of business, or maybe merges, but more importantly, those that just go out of business? How am I, you know, when I was a kid in Marshalltown or Nevada, I mean, you'd have funeral homes owned by the same family for multiple generations, but now with who knows what the funeral industry is going to do, how am I protected if I have these prepaid services?
Yep. That's a great question. So the whole prepaid funeral industry in Iowa is regulated by the Iowa Insurance Division. So first off, anybody that's licensed to sell pre-need, including a funeral home or a salesperson, whoever they are, they have to apply for a license, number one. And they do, the DCI does a background check on each person. So that's kind of the first step of that process. Now, the second thing to kind of talk about with ensuring that, you know, those funds are available, most providers, they either self-trust, meaning they use a bank where the money goes to and it's seated there for the use. And the funeral home cannot touch that money until such time as the services are rendered. Okay, so that's the first thing. We're also required that anytime we sell pre-arrangements that we have to notify, we have to send the money to the bank within 15 days of receipt. And then the bank is required within 30 days to send a notice to the consumer that the XYZ funeral home has sent that money to them to be held. So that's one of the things that's newer in the last 10 years to ensure that. And I'll tell you, the regulators that I work with at the Iowa Insurance Division, I work with some lobbyists in Des Moines as far as, you know, making sure that some of these consumer protections are in place. The folks that we have right now at the Iowa Insurance Division are some of the best as far as making sure that things are well tracked. So getting back to some of the other things. Now, if it's not self-trusted, like I talked about, where the money's held at a bank in a trust, then it's usually insurance funded. Okay. And majority of funeral homes in Iowa use Homesteaders, who you might be familiar with. It's out of West Des Moines. They have a big office there. That's all really handled by them as an insurance company. But the Iowa Insurance Division does have protocols in place, and they do have things written into the law that if for some reason a funeral home goes, you know, we're going to go out of business or like that, there are receivership situations where they could step in, and then the state would, you know, essentially find out a way to make sure that these services are rendered. I would say that I primarily only work as a funeral director. I did work in Illinois when I was going, well, in Chicago when I was going to school. And I would say that from my understanding of our laws, the Iowa Insurance Division probably has some of the, I don't want to say stricter, but some of the more stringent regulations for funeral homes to ensure that what you said doesn't happen. And we're very fortunate that way to make sure that doesn't occur. The other thing I didn't talk about is everybody that applies for one of those licenses, we have to also, we also have to file yearly reports. So let's say that I work for Iowa Cremation, and let's say that I sell 5 arrangements to people throughout the year. So what'll happen is, and it's almost time for that to occur actually, is the funeral home that I work for files a report that says Brad Kurtz sold the, you know, actually they say that Iowa Cremation sold whatever number of arrangements that they sold. And then it says that Brad Kurtz sold 5 of them. They were at this amount. So the company sends that report. And then I, as a salesperson, I have to file my own report with them and say that, I, Brad Kurtz, sold this 5 number at this price, and I have to send that to them. And then on top of that, whoever handles our funding has to send a report to the Iowa Insurance Division yearly to say, we have this money, it's in this format, and it's here for this specific person. So, you know, there's quite a bit right now that's regulated, and I can't think of too much more that they could do to really tighten it up. And we've been very fortunate in Iowa that there haven't been some of the other issues that have happened throughout the country that have been seen. And we also have a really good, on top of the insurance division, we have a really good licensing board with the Iowa Funeral Director, the Funeral Directors Licensing Board, that, you know, if somebody were to slip up, they would not be owning a funeral home any longer. We're very fortunate that that hasn't happened, but hopefully that answers your question a little bit, that, you know, the insurance division does have a lot in place.
Well, just a parallel question to that, how am I assured that the cemetery where I have a plot in 20 years is left unmowed and there's dandelions, and is there any similar legislation that these cemeteries will maintain, you know, the mowing and that type of maintenance?
Yeah, there is. And in the last, unless you're, you know, a religious type cemetery or something like that, you have to put a minimum of 20% of the amount of money that you take in on a sale for a cemetery space. You have to, at minimum, take that 20% and put it into a perpetual care fund. And that perpetual care fund is, again, regulated by the Iowa Insurance Division also to ensure that it's well managed. Now, the way the majority of those perpetual care funds work is that yearly there's some sort of distribution on the income that fund makes to help the cemetery with, you know, any general maintenance projects or things that have to be done. You can't typically start pulling from perpetual care until you sort of meet a burden of proof that you really don't have any more saleable property. And there's a whole process, I believe, that you have to go through with that. Now, has it happened? Yes, it has happened that some cemeteries essentially have, not met their perpetual care obligations in the past, but the safeguard, I guess, more or less, is, again, the insurance division creates a receivership whereby the cemetery is essentially run for a period of time by the Iowa Insurance Division. And then it's either purchased by somebody, or it may become, essentially a property that the county has to or in which it's placed. That hasn't happened very frequently, except for some cemeteries that would be referred to more or less as pioneer type cemeteries where, you know, they haven't had plus years and, you know, they have to be maintained in some shape or form. But circling back around, the Iowa Insurance Division does handle regulating cemeteries as well. And they have very similar regulations. So.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your help.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it's Bruce.
Brad, if I'm a donor, organ donor, what is the what's the process for donating, like livers or hearts or eyes or whatever? How do they do that, and then move on to some type of a funeral?
Mm-hmm.
Visitation, you mean?
Well, yeah. What's the order of business to donate and then be presentable at your own funeral?
Yeah. So if anybody's interested in donation, I always recommend, I know several of the people that work there, but go to the Iowa Donor Network website. They have a lot of great information there that can help you make that decision and understand what they do a little bit better. From my end, kind of as a funeral director, what essentially happens is, and I kind of touched on this before, but all the donation and all of those things are handled well in advance to any funeral home taking part. Now, one of the benefits that we have in Iowa is that the people that work for the Iowa Donor Network, several of them are licensed funeral directors. Because in Iowa, you have to be a licensed funeral director to be able to move the deceased following death to another location. It's written in law. So the donor network has funeral directors on staff that handle quite a bit of this, and they're especially equipped to be able to handle any of that reconstruction work that needs to take place. But generally speaking, you know, if they were to do any of those procedures, the work on our end is actually quite minimal compared to, you know, some of the other things that we have to deal with if it's a autopsy or something like that. But, you know, the donor network is very good about making sure that they do what they need to do to ensure that these life-giving gifts are able to be used, and at the same time ensure that the family has a good memory picture when we prepare somebody. So,
do I get a tax deduction for that?
You know, I bet you could try. How about that?
Brad, that is not done then at the hospital. I always thought they, you know, if you're in a hospital and you pass on and you're a donor, that isn't it better to have someone remove those organs, or if it's the corneas or whatever, but it's the funeral home that does that.
Well, no. Yeah, it depends on what it is. So if you know, God forbid I were to get in a car accident and for whatever reason they want my heart, they're going to do that. The cardiac surgeons are going to do that at the hospital, because any of those, you know, or solid organ transplant stuff has to be done under real specific circumstances. Corneas are not quite as delicate, surprisingly, because they can be put into these little vials that can
solution.
You're froze.
Chemical that keeps them for a little length of time. Yep.
Okay.
I'll keep an eye out for you.
Did I cut out there?
Yeah, you did.
You're cutting out.
You did.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah. So far, so good.
Okay. So anyway, the donor network has two facilities. They have one in North Liberty, which is near Iowa City. And then they have one in Johnston where they would do that retrieval. But all the major solid organ donation would be done at a hospital. I think a lot of them in the Des Moines area are typically done at Methodist, is my understanding. So.
Nice. Thank you for that information.
So if you're cremated, it's a no-brainer. They'll get their organs and then send you on.
No?
No?
What, John?
I'm objecting to the horrible pun, but you maybe didn't even notice it. Organ donation, no-brainer? Come on, Bruce. That's bad even for you. That's awesome. Now, I had a question anyway, if I can break this chain. As a genealogist, I come up with questions about burial practices, mostly in the past. But I have one about the present. If your service cremates me, does anybody keep any record of that and where I went? Or do you just depend on the family to do that?
Yeah, so I mean, most funeral homes, they're going to keep record of, you know, all the paperwork and things that we've done with a family. But once the cremated remains leave our possession, then we really have no control over it. So, you know, it's up to the family to do that. And that's kind of going back to my point about the importance of a cemetery or a place to return to, is, you know, there's historical genealogical value in that too, to be able to know where those people are. So
that doesn't need to be reported even to whoever in that particular state and county keeps track of death records?
No, according to Iowa law, disposition is complete at the crematory. So
I would recommend that you to ask the legislature to change that, because there are people who would like to keep track of these things, and not only for genealogy purposes.
Yep. I don't disagree with you. That's something that's a battle that we've tried before, and we just haven't gotten very far with it. That, you know, you can specify on the death certificate. So let's say that I'm cremated, and let's say I'm buried at, you know, one of the cemeteries in Des Moines. You can put cremation and burial, so that it would say, you know, I was cremated, but then I was buried at Waveland Cemetery or what have you. You can put that. So if somebody selects that, but if the family takes the cremated remains, unfortunately, it's kind of out of our possession at that point. But I certainly don't disagree with you.
Fortunately, I'm not in a family like I'm about to describe, but I know families who will fight over the remains, and some of them would delight in cremating grandma and then not telling anybody what they did with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I know such things have happened. I represented a guy who had the authority to have his uncle buried, and doggone if there wasn't a lawsuit filed by relatives in Ohio to have him dug up. And we managed to convince them that they were barking up the wrong tree, but they would have done it. That wasn't a pun. But we managed to convince them that they would lose if they tried. But people can get really mean about remains. Now, a different question. In some areas of the country, and I'm seeing it a little bit here now, maybe it's been around for a long time, people are put in mausoleums. And I've never understood why they would do that, except in areas where the groundwater is so high you can't bury anybody. Do you know anything you can tell me about that?
So, yeah. So there's a few places in Iowa, there's not very many, that do have mausoleums. Now, typically, in Iowa, unless it's an older cemetery, you're going to see a community mausoleum where there's, you know, several people in this large area. There's not too many in Iowa, though, that offer an indoor option. Many of them are outdoor mausoleums. So you know, it's really personal choice, but you know, some people, for whatever reason, don't like being the thought of being buried in the ground, or they don't like being cremated or what have you. You know, without getting too into detail, you know, the placement in the mausoleum is truly the driest form of option for placement of a full body, essentially, because, you know, if you think of, you know, the Egyptians, and I mean, that's essentially what they did with their pyramids and the mummies and so forth, is they were, you know, essentially in a mausoleum, more or less.
I have seen what I will, excuse me, I will call mausoleums for cremated remains.
Mm-hmm.
That happens too, doesn't it? I mean, that's a thing now.
Yep. Yeah. And we have, you know, some facilities will have, even niches where there's just glass on the front of them, you can actually see in to the urn inside. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, I know from experience that at least one cemetery in Iowa, but if there's one, there must be hundreds, can't exactly tell you where everybody is buried. The one I'm talking about is in Des Moines. It's a city cemetery, and if you go to them to say, I've been asked by, well, in this case, Find a Grave, and you either know what that is or you don't, to take a picture of the burial, and they'll say, here's the map, we know it isn't correct, and if you press them enough, they'll say, we think he's buried over under the Northeast Road. But that, if you, does that ever happen anymore, or do the cemeteries take better care?
Yeah, I think today cemeteries are much more clearer on their locations. I would venture to, if I had to venture to guess, I would think that the majority of those are probably older burials.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, not more recent ones. Unfortunately, what has tended to happen is records get lost, or, you know, the cemetery makes an exception for somebody and says, oh yeah, you can put, you know, four urns on this little tiny spot that's near here. And, you know, they don't end up keeping track of that. But yeah, I mean, it's really critical in the cemetery industry to make sure nowadays that you have all your ducks in a row and understanding what's going on with those, because, you know, heaven forbid that you end up having a situation where you do have to disinter somebody. It's pretty critical to know, number one, where are they at, and number two, what kind of container they're in, and, you know, what are you going and looking for? You know, back 100 years ago, they rarely disinterred anybody. I'm not saying it happens very frequently here, but I would say that, giving kind of what you talked about, our more litigious society, that it would be more of a concern in today's day and age. So,
back east, I know of, there are probably, again, a million examples, but I know directly of two. One is in a branch of my family where I don't know the exact number of plots they had, but there are far more bodies that are supposedly buried there than there were plots. Mm-hmm. And this went on over a long time. A lot of them don't have stones, and in Iowa we're used to having stones. But according to the records at Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, there are about 18 people buried there, and there aren't nearly enough plots. Does that happen in Iowa?
Not currently that I'm aware of, but I know what you're talking about. I have family that's buried in Pennsylvania, and, you know, they have them so tightly buried together. I don't exactly know how they did it, but yeah.
And I could conceive of somebody saying, bury me with my sister, but there's only one plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious whether that was possible. You said it might be possible with cremated remains.
Yeah, correct. And there's also an option that some cemeteries have that's called a lawn crypt. And essentially what that is it's sort of like an underground mausoleum, but it's, you know, room for one casket, room for the second casket, so it's double depth. You know, that's also an option in some cemeteries. I can't think off the top of my head if anywhere in Des Moines offers that, but I know there's a couple cemeteries in this area that do offer that. But
the veteran cemetery.
Yep, I didn't think about that in Van Meter. Yep. But you know, if something like what you're explaining were to happen, it's going to be a small country cemetery probably nowadays, rather than, you know, in a larger city.
They bury him in a clown car. Yep.
Complicated to watch.
What about scattering cremains? Is that unlawful? Like, if you wanted to take grandpa's remains and take a little bit and scatter it in the lake where he fished and is that legal at all?
So scattering cremated remains isn't legal or illegal?
Right. Oops, you're cutting out, Brad.
It's a pretty gray area in the law.
Right.
However, could it be treated as better?
You're still froze.
You're still frozen. And we cannot hear you. Oh, maybe he'll come back in. We'll see if Nathan will let him in.
Oh. He's still there. He just turned off his camera.
Oh, there he is. I see. Oh, he's coming
around,
back.
Jumping around.
There you are.
What happened? Sorry about that.
That's okay.
You reincarnated.
Yeah, there you go.
Brad, we missed your answer to Marilyn about whether it was legal or illegal to scatter remains. That's when you were cutting in and out.
Yeah. So it's a pretty gray area in the law. It's not specific enough to say you cannot scatter cremated remains. However, could it legally be conceived as littering? Could it legally be conceived as introducing something into a controlled waterway? I'm not equipped to give legal advice on that, but all I can say is that, there's no law that says cremated remains have to go in this spot you're not allowed to scatter. There's nothing that says that. So.
Yet.
Well, and if they're not keeping track of the remains, who's going to know?
That's exactly what
sand trap we've put Warren and Bruce and Bob in.
But I think John said it. I think they don't have anything in the law yet. I think that's probably the key word.
And with his interest in genealogy, that is so important, as I am involved also tracing my history. Yep. And that is something that it's like, oh darn.
Yeah, you know? me too. I'm fortunate that once my family came to Iowa, they stuck around Cedar Rapids or in Des Moines. So I'm fortunate that way. But yeah, there's a lot. If you're searching for people in other places and there's no cemetery records or some of that kind of stuff, you're gonna have a hard time. So
right. I'll give you free genealogist advice that I've learned by accident or by working on it, that if great Uncle Louis was buried in Greenwood Cemetery and there is no stone or there aren't adequate records of the cemetery, and some of them keep remarkably good records and some of them don't, but the county doesn't want to admit it, but they are required to keep records of cemeteries that are no longer in private hands. So I know I went up to Pima County, and the records of one certain cemetery, and I can't think of the name of it, but it's one of the big ones, are actually in a drawer in a clothier's shop. He has been designated by the township trustees to keep track of this stuff. And since he's got a little interest in civic affairs or history or something, he agreed to do it. For another cemetery, they're in a file cabinet in a lawyer's office. And that shop isn't going to be there forever. The lawyer isn't going to be there forever. But the county clerk is supposed to keep track of this stuff. Now, sometimes they don't even know about it. And they surely don't want to help you because it's a burden to them and they really have to think about it. But if you're ever looking for whatever happened to Grandpa Louis, and you know he's in such and such a cemetery, the fact that the cemetery says our records burned isn't the end of the story. At least it may not be.
Wow.
Just so you know.
And that's Iowa, John, mostly? Or
in Iowa, there is law that says that records such as those from cemeteries, I'm not talking duplicate records, but old records, particularly of cemeteries that are no longer being maintained, are the responsibility of it's of the township. And most places don't even know that there are townships anymore. But there is township government, and they do have responsibilities, and they don't want to do it, but they have to. It's an interesting factoid.
It is, yeah.
I have a question. If there's space available in a family plot, and it's, you know, in another state or in another town, is it really complicated and expensive to, you know, ship the body there?
No, it depends on where it is, really. And it depends on, you know, are you going to have a service where you pass away or not? Or, you know, there's various factors, but, you know, it's kind of funny to say this, but, shipping human remains from one place to another via airline is actually not a whole lot different than what it costs for your average plane ticket. So, I mean, it's not, It's not a whole lot different. So, you know, I mean, everybody's opinion of expensive is different, but, you know, relatively speaking, looking at it as a whole, it's not terrible. No.
They have space available seats.
Yep. Yep. Special seating.
But what if the person,
it's not that far away, to do the funeral homes provide service to take the body there?
Yeah. You know, again, it depends. So like one interesting fact that you guys probably aren't going to ever know, but at least for Eastern and Central Iowa, the only airport that you can fly human remains out of is the Des Moines airport. So even the airport we have in Cedar Rapids, they don't fly large enough aircraft in here. So if we were to have to send someone to another facility, our, you know, somebody from Cedar Rapids here has to drive to Des Moines to do that. But yeah, usually a funeral home is going to offer some type of service for delivery to the airport and that part. So, you know, you're going to have to get two funeral providers in play usually, but it all depends on if you're going to have a service and where it would be on where you start. So
what happens if a person says, I have no people, so to speak, but I'd like to be buried by grandpa and grandma, and I know there are spots left in their spot in such and such a cemetery. How do you prove you own that or have the right?
That broke, and it depends on, you know, the cemetery's rules and regulations, and again, their record keeping. I mean, you know, it's sort of burden of proof is on the person that wants to be buried there, more or less, to be able to provide, you know, that information. Now, you know, most cemeteries today, like we've talked about, the larger, newer cemeteries maintain all of that information and should be able to easily provide, you know, how to go about that. But it could be a little more difficult for some of the older ones. So,
John,
I've run into that situation, and I've called the cemeteries to see what the process was.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And they're the ones that you want to visit with. And in my case, before I'd met Bruce and we were married 10 years ago, I had an experience that was very scary. And I thought, oh my gosh, my kids would not even know where to bury me. Take me back to Wilmette. And so I called the parish, and then I called the cemetery, who is now taking care of the Wilmette one. Because, you know, when they get bigger, you know, you still have a little bitty cemetery, but then there's a bigger mother load that's going to take care of the forever ground people. That's it. Thank you.
Yep.
But anyway, so what they said was, well, your mom and dad are buried there, as are my grandparents and my great grandparents. And he said, if you would like to be put with your parents, cremation is fine. You have the space from the level of the ground, top of the ground, to the top of the concrete vault. Mm-hmm. And thank you. And so I just had to have my siblings sign off that it'd be okay for me to do that.
Yeah, that's most typical in most cases. It depends on the ownership and all those kind of things. You know, it gets more convoluted the older the cemetery is, because you're talking about more and more generations. But in most instances, it can go as simple as that. So
right. Yeah, that it was amazing. So I had them all sign off, and it's all ready, and it's, you know, they have the paperwork already, if we so choose now to even still go that direction, but yeah. It's ready.
When I was practicing law, I occasionally got into situations where somebody would show up and say, this is the deed to the cemetery lot. And I had to explain to them that those are evidence that there may have been a contract that you may or may not be entitled to enforce, and those are not recorded anywhere. So if any of you have cemetery deeds, see a lawyer. They can come up with some creative ways, but probably mostly involving notifying the cemetery that there is a claimant.
Yeah.
And there is no law on that.
No, nowadays most cemeteries refer to them not as deeds, but as certificates of interment rights. And basically then what that certificate of interment rights means is that the who it's issued to has the right to be buried in that specific location, not that they specifically own that physical piece of land. So, yeah.
Imagine what the taxes would be on that. Real estate taxes, right?
Paying taxes by the foot is probably better than what I pay at the house.
What if I want to be buried next to my, I have only one wife, don't freak anybody, next to my second wife, but my half-brother wants me to be buried next to his mother. Or did I say dad? Point's the same.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, you could get into a point where the estate would have to figure out who owns that certificate of interment.
Correct. Yeah.
And I don't know the answer there either, but don't let that happen.
To be buried a little bit in both places, is that allowed, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what the cemetery allows, but yeah, we've had situations where, they bury, you know, maybe a lady had, you know, she was married and her first husband passed away, and then she remarried and her second husband is in another cemetery. So the cremated remains have been split and placed in two locations. We have had that happen.
How do they write that on the location? Which location do they give them? Just one?
I guess you pick. I don't remember exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think that might have been a situation where I think the family might have taken them and that was their decision on what they wanted to do. But
okay. Yeah. It's called a layaway plan.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just going to get a sign that I can hold up whenever Bruce does that. And the sign is going to say, sigh.
I have relatives out in the East Coast and a lot of them who are cremated go to North Carolina because they have Asheville out there.
Sigh.
Sigh. Yeah.
I may be signing out here, Brad.
Okay.
We have to put up with this every week, and you can see it isn't going to stop in the near future, I'm
afraid. Do I need to bring the duct tape next time?
I hope you get just as exciting topics as this to joke about. So.
Well, this one's pretty grave, but other than that, it's, you know.
Did you say what I think you said?
Yeah.
This one's pretty what?
Great.
You did. No. Sigh.
Oh.
He's rubbing off on me.
Oh, it's, yeah. It's catching, Bev.
It's a pandemic. More deadpan humor, yeah.
Okay, back to our source here. On your list of four things, I think you said that getting the discussion started, and my kids are all in their 40s. I got three, and from 42 to 48. Is that best to do without their spouses, just the nuclear family, just me and my wife and our three kids without grandkids and spouses? Or what is your...
That's to you, but, it depends on how many opinions you want. I mean, if you're just telling them, you know, this is what we've planned for, this is what we're going to do, you know, and you don't want to interaction or, you know, suggestions except for your kids, then I would limit it, you know, to just those folks. But, you know, each family is a little bit different, but, that's at least a starting point, and then they can share with their spouses or the grandkids as they see fit. So.
Just to follow up, would you suggest that you tell them in advance that we're going to meet at our home and the purpose of the meeting is for us to discuss this? Or do you just, while you have them captive, say, why don't we bring this topic on the table?
Well, again, that depends on them.
You don't know my family, I understand.
Yeah. I think there's, it depends on how you think that they may react. Now, you know, this is a more normal topic to me. And I recently my father decided, you know, he and his wife decided that they were going to, you know, get this stuff done and review a few things with me. And, you know, he just brought it up one day, which, you know, is fine. It's normal to me, but if you think they're going to get excited or something, you may want to warn them ahead of time that, you know, you've been doing some estate planning and, you know, you really want to be able to explain to them the choices that you've made. And it's really to their benefit to at least learn kind of what you're thinking so that there's no questions down the road. I don't think it hurts to forewarn them, if you will. That, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Do people ever get buried in one place and then, you know, for family reasons, you'd like a marker put someplace else where you could trace, you know, for genealogy purposes and people do things like that?
Yeah, that's a fun word called cenotaph is what that's called. So where there's a marker and there's no actual remains buried, it's called a cenotaph. Yeah, C-E-N-T-O-P-H. It's not very common, but you know, I have seen it before where, you know, for whatever reason, a family decides that they need a place to come to. Now, one of the most interesting cenotaphs that I know of happens to be at a cemetery in Cedar Rapids here. It's in a mausoleum, and it was a husband and wife. They are entombed there, but their son died in the Vietnam War, and his body so far was never recovered. And so it was important enough to them to have a place to go to that they purchased a container and they placed memorabilia items of his into that cenotaph, basically. So, you know, it meant enough to them to have a place to return to. So, yeah, I mean, it does happen. It's not super common, but at least you learned a word from me today. So.
Thank you. You learned a lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
What was that word again?
Yep. It's called cenotaph.
Cenotaph.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
Okay. We can Google it, Pam. Yeah. It'll pop up the right spelling, whatever it is. Just fine. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. A great, great group. Lots of great questions. I got to say, I really appreciate it because, you know, sometimes nobody talks and that gets a little odd.
Not this group.
That's great because I do better at answering questions because I have a wealth of knowledge and I don't like going through a slideshow presentation all the time because it's better to get your questions answered. That's what you want to know. So.
Thank you. I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. Did you do your studies that you said Chicago? That was Evanston, right on Central Street, wasn't it?
Actually, they had moved to Wheeling.
They did?
When I was there. Yeah, and they're still in Wheeling right now.
Okay.
Yeah, but right. I lived in Norridge. I don't know if you know where that is. It's near O'Hare.
That's too far west.
Yeah.
I don't know much about that.
Yeah, I lived there and I lived in and worked at a funeral home there. So.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, we're a lot older than you. My dad used to take me out to O'Hare Airport, my brother and I, when it was first opening and we could walk on the roof of the airport and you could watch the planes come in and we'd run down the terminals. They had the pay phones for all the salesmen going and coming. And we would always check all the little change machines for quarters and nickels and dimes. It was a great place.
That's a very great memory.
It is.
Did you find much money?
I don't recall. Probably. I think we probably had a little handful of it because, you know, back then they were, you know, the salesmen needed to keep track. And so a lot of them took it. But there were a lot of people that were international that didn't, you know, I mean, they just leave it because they didn't understand the system. But it was fun going on top and watching those planes come in the Glenview Naval Air Base. We'd go out there and watch planes come in. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Brad, where did you get your interest to go into the funeral business?
Yeah, so my my grandfather was not a funeral director, but he worked part-time at a funeral home before he passed away as a retirement job, basically. And I got to know some of the staff, and just one day they asked me if I needed a job. And, you know, being about 17 years old, I said, well, yeah, I could use a job. It's a lot better than I helped on a farm, and I was kind of tired of that. I'm not cut out for farm life. So I said, yeah, absolutely. So I gave it a shot, and it just kind of stuck. So, you know, and nice. you find something that your heart's in and that you believe in. And that's really kind of the way it's been ever since. So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing that we do in our line of work, and we meet so many interesting people and, you know, really strange situations sometimes. And, you know, you meet people on their worst day, but you also get to help them. So that's really important to me. So
thank you for sharing with us. This is awesome.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah. Yep. If you ever want me to come back, I'll get together a better joke routine and try to throw that at you.
You come back anytime. You're welcome to just join in. You just tell Pastor Nathan that's what you're going to do.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.